Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we encourage you to go to that page as well as our schedules page. Not only to see who's upcoming, but to see who's come by to visit us and talk about their particular work and how they're trying to make this a better world, a better place for themselves and for the rest of us as well. It is a collaborative effort. Sometimes it's unconsciously collaborative, but nonetheless a collaborative effort on those of us who are consciously trying to better ourselves. I have to say that I've been introduced to an interesting concept that I had never thought of before, at least not in these terms, having to do with the afterlife and those types of things, and how we have evolved even in that space and time, even though there is no space and time in that area, in terms of coming back into this life and continuing to grow and change and better understanding that we're all students and we're all just trying to do the best we can. Well, that's what we're trying to do on this program to help you. And we're going to be talking with a woman who's been on this program before, Joanne DiMaggio, and we're going to talk about her latest work, Karma Can Be a Real Pain, Past Life Clues to Current Life Maladies. Joanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Richard. I'm really happy to be with you again.
This is something that I know a lot of people are a little confused about sometimes, especially if they've heard several of the other terms associated with karma. They hear the word dharma. There's also, and a lot of these words are coming from the Eastern philosophies, if you will, Maya and so forth, in terms of the illusion that we live in this world. And so I'm thinking maybe what we'll do is, from your perspective, how do you view this aspect of karma? Then we're going to dive into this whole aspect of going through past lives to come to a present day understanding of who and what and where we are. We'll say from a health perspective, what is karma?
Well, karma in and of itself is really the law of cause and effect. Edgar Cayce, who's the father of holistic medicine and one of the most renowned psychics of the 20th century, said, "Whatsoever a soul soweth, that shall it also reap." So that's a definition of karma to a certain extent. Physical karma, the one that I'm talking about in my book, is a manifestation of that law, the law of cause and effect, but it's taking place at a visible or physical level within the human body.
Okay. So we're bringing with us from those past lives certain issues that are unresolved that then manifest themselves. How did you begin the process of defining those issues and their association with present-day maladies?
Well, I sort of stumbled on this. I've been doing past life research for over 30 years. That's an area of that I'm very, very interested in, is actually running research projects and studies. And over the last couple of years, I've seen a shift taking place within my own practice, in which I've having a lot of people come to me with different physical conditions, and they've exhausted the traditional medical route, and they've said, you know, I've tried everything, this isn't going away, I don't understand it, how did I get this, what is it all about, and they've said, you know, maybe this is rooted in a past life. They sort of say it in a way like they're not really believing it, but they're thinking of that it might be a possibility. So I saw that starting to change, where more and more people were coming to me. Then I attended a medical intuition conference that was held in Virginia Beach, and Dr. Norman Shealy, he's a medical doctor, a PhD, was there, and he made a statement right at the beginning of the conference that in his experience, all significant illnesses or accidents in this life are the result of unfinished business from a previous life. And I thought, wow, a medical doctor is actually saying this. So that got me interested in pursuing this topic a little further. So I started to do some research in the Edgar Cayce readings. He's got a lot of readings that he did on physical karma, everything from acne to venereal disease. And also looked into what some others in this field, like Dr. Brian Weiss and Roger Wolger, and a lot of the leading professionals in this field were saying about physical karma. And then from that, I decided that I would see for myself. And so I devised a year-long research project in which I had volunteers with chronic conditions come to me for a regression to see if we could identify a prior life in which this condition first appeared. The origins of it were in the other lifetime.
And did a lot of this make a lot of sense in the respect of yeah, it makes sense that that particular issue, as I'm using the term, would certainly be associated with that particular malady. Does that, you know what I'm saying in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a correlation between what, it could be something that they did themselves in a prior life, or it could be something that somebody did to them, or it could be an attitude that they had, or it could be a wound or an illness or a trauma that they experienced that that's playing itself out now in this life. So it's in many cases it was tit for tat or an eye for an eye. In others, it was a little bit more vague. And so we really had to look at that life as a whole. And I allowed my clients, my volunteers, to really tell their own story. And that's basically what's in the book. There's 23 out of the 50 sessions that I did in which they tell their own story. We did an extensive follow-up 6 to 8 weeks after the session to see if their condition improved or was healed or stayed the same or got worse. So there was a lot of scientific approach to this, and they all, without question, saw the correlation between what had happened in the prior life as to what was going on in their current life.
And did it surprise many people as you began to reveal this information to the people who had these various maladies?
Well, they revealed it themselves. So, no one was more surprised than they were because most of them, I wouldn't say every one of them, went to a lifetime that they had absolutely no knowledge of. And they didn't all necessarily believe in this when they came in. Mm-hmm. So it was especially fascinating to see once they went through the process of how their mind worked and how this came up and how they were able to draw the parallels between the two lifetimes. And their stories are very compelling. And, you know, you could maybe dismiss one or two of them, but 50, all 50 had some sort of an aha moment at the end of it. And one, you know, like there was one man in particular, 68 years old. He was a Navy veteran and a defense contractor for 40 years. And he came in with arthritis in his thumbs. That was his complaint when he came to me. And he went back to a life in 1832 in Virginia. He was 35 years old. And he saw himself as a Civil War officer in the 32nd Virginia Infantry. And he would make it a point of cutting off the thumbs of the his Union cavalry opponents, because he wanted to make sure that they weren't able to hold a sword or fire a gun. So now in this life, here we are, you know, in 2014-15 when I did the regression with him, mm-hmm. and he's experienced arthritis, and where is it? It's only in his thumbs. So those stories to me were very compelling and very fascinating, and to the person going through it made total sense to them.
Well, it seems to me that obviously this would be very valuable. And that's one of the things that I'm finding very intriguing over the last few months of interviewing that I've done is that the work that people are doing is really quite remarkable. I'm actually quite taken by some of the things that people are doing, the discoveries, if you will. I mean, it's not like this information hasn't always been there, but it hasn't really been as researched. And I know that this is a struggle that I know some people have. They're vested, and, you know, no judgment here, but we all are vested in our various belief systems.
Right.
And so it's hard to accept these new concepts or new explanations for that matter. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you going, okay, so what in the heck is causing the problem I'm having, you know, with this constant reoccurring of inflammation and soreness in my ankles, my knees, my feet, you know, and so forth. It's like, my gosh, for literally decades, I never had any. I bicycled everywhere. I walk. I love walking, all these kinds. And now all of a sudden this is happening, and I am looking for a present day problem. And you're telling me that most likely the reality is has nothing to do with the present day lifetime.
It could be. You know, this really isn't new. This has been around for centuries. The problem we have is that in this country, only 24% of people believe in reincarnation. And so, and they do use their Christian beliefs as a stumbling block for them. Now, I'm Christian. I went to 12 years of Catholic school, but I found the whole concept of karma and the whole idea of reincarnation just made sense to me, that this is what a just God would be about, a loving God would be about. And so I've really embraced that since the time I was a teenager. I resonated to it. If you go to the East, the majority of the people there believe in reincarnation. 1.4 billion people on the planet believe in it. But it's just a little difficult for us in the West to embrace it. And yet, you know, you don't even need to believe in this for it to work. The people who came to me, all walks of life, they were very renowned in their fields. I had university professors, and I had aerospace project manager and flight attendants and registered nurses. You know, people that wouldn't look at them and say, oh, you know, they're prone toward making things up. And they came to me with very real issues. I had arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, liver and kidney problems. People came in with weight and digestive issues. A lot of them had head-related concerns. They had concussions or they were speech impaired or hearing impaired. Many, many people came in with foot, leg, and back pain. That was one of the most popular. But I also had people coming in with sexual karma, drug and alcohol abuse, and mental and emotional disorders. So it really crossed all boundaries. And these people came in, when I asked them, you know, do you think this is past life related? They would say, I don't know, but I'm willing to find out. And that willingness, that openness, is what enabled them to resolve a lot of the issues. And, you know, I did have several who had a complete spontaneous healing from the one time. Now, I'm not saying this replaces medical attention. I go to a doctor on a regular basis. I'm taking medication on a regular basis. So I would never, ever say that this is going to replace it. This is a supplement. This helps the individual to understand what's going on a much deeper level, much more profound level. It's a soul level, this is what's going on. And in knowing that, then they can change their perspective on it, their self-understanding of it, and do some forgiveness work and then move on. And you know, that happened in many of the cases of the people who said their condition remained the same. So physically they didn't change the condition, but emotionally and mentally, they were able to understand it better on that other different level, that deep level. And in doing so, they changed their attitude and their perspective about it. And in doing that, they came the ultimate healing for them.
With the disclaimer in mind, let me ask you then about the issues that I am dealing with. I'm not asking specifically for a diagnosis here on the air, but I'm curious, when I describe that, or if anybody were to come to you and say, you know, I have these aches and pains in my, you know, like this inflammation, it comes and goes. It's not always there. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to the doctor and he said, she said this, that, the other thing, put me on this medication, that medication, blah, 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 blah. From your research, what does that tell you? Or do I have to go through a past life regression session in order to help to define, better define and understand where and why this is happening to me today?
Right. I'm not a psychic, so I cannot diagnose a condition just by having a casual conversation about it. That information is buried deep in your soul, and your soul has access to every thought, word, and deed and experience you've had since the moment of creation. And I don't mean the moment of creation in this life. I mean the moment that our souls first came into the physical body. And we decided, you know, we're really our spiritual beings having a human experience. And in that human experience, where we are experiencing various types of physical conditions. I did have a woman, her name was Christine. She's a government contractor, 63 years old. She went back to a life in which she she was walking out of a bar after she had made a deal with these men, and a bicycle ran into her, and her legs got tangled in the bicycle wheel. Now that is manifesting in this life, in that she's got a lot of pain in both of her legs. But in this life, she has a fear of standing on her own two feet. She falls quite a bit. She in the previous life, she was had a lot of pride. She didn't want to admit that she was hurt. We see that now repeating itself, and that whole idea of not standing on her own two feet is the message in this life that that physical malady was bringing to her. Sometimes that's the way it is. It's a message. It's a reminder of you know, don't do what you did in the past because this is going to be the outcome.
Interesting.
You know, it does require going into this altered state of consciousness so that you could go deep in your soul and get that information yourself.
That's very interesting. And I love the concept as you've described it. I'll use the term metaphor to help to describe and understand. I mean, even if we can't go through these, you know, again, these past life regression therapy sessions, sometimes if we just spend some time in meditation, you know, the answers might come to us because we're not trying. If we just kind of let that go and give up the desperation to know, you know, and especially for those who have tried everything. I mean, they've been to numerous doctors and this and that and the other thing. In terms of and I would take it that this applies to any malady, including those that are life threatening. I mean, we're talking about everything here, right?
Oh yeah, everything. You know, it's not a cure-all, and
I understand.
I would never say that going through it that they would be that the outcome would change. As a matter of fact, I had two people that I know of. One had Crohn's disease, and she did go into remission immediately after our session. Then she it reoccurred, and we did another session. She went back into remission again, and now it's reoccurred again. So she had to have she may have to have surgery. And another one who had problems with her hips ended up having to have a hip replacement, even though we went through the session and found out the origin of all of that. Sometimes it's to the point where physically that they do need intervention, and even understanding it is not going to exactly cure it. But there are other ways besides regression to get at this information, and soul writing is one of them. That was part of my session. They can find out information about past lives through dreams definitely through meditation. So if you don't want to actually do the regression part of it, although that would be the fastest and most reliable way of getting the information, if you work with a reputable therapist on that. But certainly there are other clues that will come up if you really need to spend the time and focus in on it.
Mm-hmm. I know some people get very, and rightly so, they get very serious about it, saying, look, I have got to get to the bottom of this. I'm tired of this. I know that there are folks, and I remember even going back into the early 80s, I was producing a radio program back in Phoenix with a chiropractor at the time, and I still remember the struggles that chiropractors were having, just, you know, getting recognized and acknowledged for the work that they were doing, and now acupuncture, acupressure, kind of along the same lines. I mean, at least now chiropractic is somewhat, it's covered by insurance. Anyway, he used to tell me that it is, or not just me, but the listeners, that it is not normal to be in pain, and that you should not settle. Find the reasons why. And that's what we're kind of offering here on this particular program. Karma can be a real pain. You want to take a look at your past life clues to current life maladies. And Joanne DiMaggio is my guest. Her website is actually Joanne DiMaggio. That's JoanneDiMaggio.com. And of course, we had you on the program some time ago, and we were talking about aspects of writing, if I'm not mistaken, and the aspect of, and I have to say that, and I don't know that we necessarily defined it as journaling per se, but I remember I had difficulty with that concept because the difficulty for me was in the journaling, because I felt like I couldn't be honest even in my journaling. Because what if somebody got a hold of these books?
Yeah.
You know, now people are now, they're journaling online, and how can I be sure they're really being honest? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In that regard. And I wanted to touch upon this just a little bit. You know, I don't want to go too far afield from talking about this other aspect of karma and our maladies. But I'm curious as to maybe that being also another method, maybe in a getting into. And again, we're not talking about seeking out a practitioner or a therapist to go through sessions, but sitting down and just, you know, calming and getting into a meditative state, having your pen in hand and just jotting down what comes. And I'm not even talking about automatic writing here either.
No, because they're different.
Yes.
Automatic writing and inspirational. Well, soul writing is another name for inspirational writing, and this is a method that Edgar Cayce taught back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. It is basically a written form of meditation. So you think about prayer as you talking to God, and meditation as God talking to you. Soul writing is you taking notes. So you would go through the same identical process as you would when you do a meditation. And it's in the back of my book, as a matter of fact. There's a whole chapter on how to do this. But you would basically just do some deep breathing, relax yourself completely, say a prayer of protection, surround yourself with white light. Do not work with anything remotely spiritual without doing that. And then put the pen down and ask a question. Because, you know, I likened it to the phone home card that's available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's spiritual guidance available to you at all times, but you have to ask. So the soul writing can be used absolutely for any aspect of your life. You can ask any question you want, or you can just say, please give me a message for my highest and best, and then allow it to come from above through you, through your soul, and then out your hand and onto the paper. It is the most profound method of communication that I have found, and people... I love it when I get people that are more left brain. Like, you know, I had an attorney in one of my workshops, and we did the whole soul writing session, and she burst into tears afterwards because she said, I never thought that something this profound, that I could write something this profound. And I said, but you can. Anybody can do it. It's available to you, that kind of guidance. I use it with the regressions. I used it in this particular project as well. So when the regression was over, and they were already in a state of altered consciousness, I brought them half the way up, and then I said, you know, I put a paper on their lap and pen in their hand, and I said, now ask your soul if there's anything else it could tell you about that past life experience that you did not see in the regression. And I tell you the truth, this is where the aha moments happened, because the writing started to give them the backstory. It answered the questions that they didn't get answered in the regression. I had one man who had asthma. He wasn't in my project this time. I had worked with him before. He was in his late 60s at the time, and he had died, he said, in his regression, he had died from suffocation in Pompeii. And in this lifetime, he was suffering from asthma. And we did the regression, and that was all well and good. But then when we did the writing, the first sentence he wrote was, asthma, the result of seared lungs. And after that writing, he realized that the asthma he was experiencing in this life was tied to his actions in that previous lifetime. And once that was revealed, the asthma disappeared. So he was a case of spontaneous healing.
Wow.
Like I said, it doesn't happen in all cases, mm-hmm. but that's how powerful this writing can be.
That's amazing. I mean, and maybe not so amazing, because I remember in this biblical passage, you know, Jesus, you know, he was being confronted by all kinds of people, you know, talking about, you know, look at all the stuff you do. This is so cool what you're doing, you know. And he says, he stops him and says, hey, it may be cool, but this is nothing. You guys are going to do even more incredible stuff than me,
yeah.
You know. And I honestly believe that this is part of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, very honestly, I really think that it is part of that process of understanding and going through these lessons that we're supposed to learn, or that that's the other thing. What perplexes me now as I gather new information in my life. A lot of the old stuff I kind of have to throw away, and it's not easy to do because, again, you know, vested in those belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as a matter of fact, I'm starting to, and I know all of us, when we drive, we have this problem with other people and the things that they do, right?
Right, right.
And trying to find that coping mechanism that will help us to get through the traffic, through the knuckleheads and the judgment and all of that stuff, and then creating more dis-ease in our bodies,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think I found one that might work for me when I start looking at the other drivers and not even what they're doing, even though what they're doing spurs my attention to them. When I look at them as fellow students,
mm-hmm.
okay, that seems to help.
Yes, absolutely.
But I have to go another step further, because when I was a kid growing up in school, I hated my fellow students too, because they were no better than a lot of the drivers I pass judgment on today. So I have a secondary hurdle to get through that. Look, and I actually have to look at it from the standpoint of college. When I went to junior college, I didn't have that dynamic that I had in grade school and the early days of high school. But college was a whole different thing. You wanted to be there. You wanted to learn. I loved English class. I loved the very algebra, and I loved the different classes I was taking, and so on and so forth. So from that standpoint, as I'm walking across the campus of the junior college that I went to, I think in those terms now, when I'm driving, and this is just recently, by the way,
mm-hmm.
they're just students. They're just going through the lessons that they've chosen. They set out the coursework and the curriculum before they got here, and they're going to class. They're in class.
That's right.
So you and I may be a part of their lesson. I may not. But now that's my choice. When I get to that space, now there's no more judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my blood pressure will come down.
Well, you know, Richard, you could take that a step further and apply that to the people that are in your inner circle, your family members, your friends, because, you know, you touched on something that's very, very true. We have chosen. We travel as a soul family, as a soul pod, so to speak, so that we reincarnate with the same folks over and over again. And before we do, we have this pre-life session in which we decide, well, I'm going to go in and I'm going to the earth and I'm going to work on, say I'm going to work on abandonment. That's a human experience that I have not experienced before. Or you say, you know, I abandoned somebody in a prior lifetime and now I'm going to go and see what it feels like to be abandoned. So your soul family is all around you and they go, yeah, okay, well, we love you, little soul, and we want to make sure that you move on. And you graduate that class called abandonment. So we're going to come in with you, and at some point in your life, we're going to abandon you so that you can actually experience what that's like. So one of the questions I ask at the end of the regression is, are there any people from the prior lifetime that are in your life now? Keeping in mind that we change sexes, we change the way we look, we change our relationships so that your mother in this life could have been your husband in a previous life. Our, you know, a sister in this life could have been your father in another life, but you can tell who they are, because I am sure everybody, all of your listeners, can relate to this, that there are some people that are around them who they feel on some deep, inexplicable level that they've known before. And that they have, and when you do the regression, however, then you actually see the similarities between these people then and these people now. And that just adds another layer of understanding. And so, yes, you know, even when they cause you a tremendous amount of pain in this life, often we can thank them for that because they enable us to explore the very lesson that we signed up to tackle in this lifetime.
You know, I was talking with a friend of mine about all of this, and he got extremely frustrated because he said, well, that sounds great and fine and good, but I'm tired of all of these lessons. I am tired of going to school. I'm sick of this. It's like enough already. I can't even get away from it in the next life, in the life between lives, as we had on our program, representative from the Newton Institute, and he just kind of went off on that. And I said, look, I'm just passing on the information. Don't get mad at me.
Right.
But it is one of those things that, you know, we do have to come to grips with. And the one thing that gave me a little solace when I first started reading one of the books, at the beginning, at least it made reference to the fact that when you leave this life, the physical material world as a human being, or whatever you came into this world as, mm-hmm. you get a period of rest.
You do.
And you can rest for as long. Now, there's no time there, but
right.
but since that's all I've got to work with here, you can rest as long as you feel you need to.
Yeah, well, there is no time on the spiritual end of it, but the average period between lives is somewhere between 50 and, like, 200 years. That's what the research is showing. Now, people that commit suicide or who are killed prematurely generally come back almost immediately because it's like dropping out of school. You didn't get a chance to finish the curriculum, so you've got to go back and retake that class again. But, yeah, I mean, there are people who have had very, very lofty past lives. They were accomplished a great deal. They were famous people. They made a big impact on humanity. They may come in the next life and be absolutely an ordinary, you know, John Smith or Jane Doe, and they're just going to come here and kind of sit back, put their feet up, and enjoy the beauty of the planet and the experience of being in a human body again. So I think when we're in spirit, we can't wait to be in the body again. And when we're in the body, we're like, oh, I've had enough of this. I want to go back home, you know. But, you know, you keep evolving. You keep evolving. And things like your talents and abilities, karma is not always bad, by the way. You bring in talents and abilities and skills that you've acquired in a previous lifetime. I like to say you put them in a karmic bank account, and then you can draw on them. You know, I'm sure you've met people who, like they're in a family, say that they're a very gifted musician, and nobody else in the family has any musical ability at all, and you go, well, where did that come from? Well, those talents and abilities came with you just as these maladies came with you. So it's a very, very balanced system, and that's why I think it's, you know, I'm amazed at how awesome the whole experience of life can be when you factor in this part of it, this element of it, that, you know, that if people would open themselves up to it and just have an open mind. You know, we have a creator who is limitless in what can be accomplished here. So certainly this is within the realm of that.
I'm just taken aback by all this great information that's coming across these days. As you say, it is not new. It is something that's been there. It's always been there. But it's up to us as to whether or not we choose to, you know, sort of acknowledge it, take it in, evaluate it, see if it works for us. As I like to say, if it resonates with you, take it with you. Go. You know, we put out the smorgasbord table. You know,
right.
We put all kinds of stuff out there, and you may not like it all. That's okay. Try it. You know, I mean, maybe just take a taste. I mean, there's stuff I have tried. I often say, you know, I'll try anything once and sometimes twice. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that I've tried once and that was sufficient, you know. matter of fact, I don't know why this comes to mind, but my wife and I were having a nice weekend at the Ritz-Carlton in Phoenix, and And they were having this buffet upstairs, really nice. And they had these beautiful salmon-colored little flowers. They were edible. You know, and I thought, that actually looks pretty good. And so I took it, and I put the whole thing in my mouth. And the reason why it was salmon-colored, because that's what it was. It was salmon. And it was raw.
Oh, gosh.
And I looked everywhere, finally found a napkin. However, that was a bad experience. I should have taken it in smaller increments, and maybe I might have liked it. You know, and I'm not saying that I will never try salmon again, but, you know, that's one of those situations where, you know, you do have to be careful. When we come back, I want to continue talking about this whole aspect of the research that you've done, or the work that you've done with people, as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. We have more coming your way.
Tell me your story.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with the author of the latest release, Karma Can Be a Pain. Joanne DiMaggio at joannedimaggio.com. It can be a pain even if you're not in pain, because we sometimes have to accept the fact that our life is going in a particular direction because of some of the things that we've done in this life. Then we have to take into consideration past life actions that we didn't deal with then. And that's what I would have to say, that, you know, if I had my druthers, I would much rather deal with instant karma, which could be problematic in and of itself too, but at least you'd be done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You wouldn't carry it over. And it would love to, it would be wonderful to be able to do that, but it seems like there are more actions in our lives than there is time to rectify.
It seems to be the case. That's why they're carried over to another lifetime. There's a thing called, you know, the law of grace, and that's basically how you respond to what's going on around you. There are souls, for instance, that choose to live in a damaged body in this life, but it doesn't necessarily have to involve a karmic debt that they're paying off because of a past life responsibility for an injury to someone. This is what Michael Newton was talking about in one of his books. He said that choice to live in that body can involve a learning path for another type of lesson, which would be for somebody else. So if you have a child who has a challenged physical condition, it may be that they didn't do anything at all to bring that on. They may be just a highly evolved soul who's come in service to you to see how you respond. How do you treat them? How do you take care of them? What compassion does this bring forward in you? Or are you neglectful? Are you embarrassed? You know, are you resentful? So a lot of that sometimes has more to do with the parents than it does for the child that's dealing with that issue. So, there's cases of emotional, mental disorders with people who maybe not necessarily did something to somebody else, but their attitude toward that person in the previous lifetime. You know, that they didn't have any compassion for them. And in this life, it's happening now to them. Mm. And so they're seeing what it's like from the other side. And that is what is leveling out the playing field. That is what grace is about. It's how you are, how you respond to what's going on. There was an article in Venture Inward magazine, which is a magazine that the Edgar Cayce organization, ARE, puts out. And Garrett Oppenheim wrote an article called A Karmic Case of Polio. And he said at the end that he came to look on his handicap as a gift because it enabled him to understand the afflictions of others, and at the same time it enabled him to enlarge his horizons to become a better person. So there are various levels of healing that take place in uncovering the origin of these maladies. And by the way, most people only need one session. It's not like traditional psychotherapy where you go every week. This gets right to the origin of the problem, and in seeing the origin, they're able to make that adjustment, that attitude adjustment. Now, some people do come back, though they want to go back into that life further. But for other people in my research project, I think there were two who had multiple sessions, but most of them was just the one session, and they were able to get something out of it.
I have to say that I find more credibility in the works of Edgar Cayce than most people. And the reason is because he fought it his entire life, probably right up, if I'm not mistaken, from what I've from the books that I've read. And I've read, I think, pretty much all of his work. You know, he was a devout Christian.
He was.
It's like, but it was like, but he still did the work. That was what, and that's the reason why I find so much more credibility in people like him, because in spite of the fact that he had this belief system he was vested in, as we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. he still did the work.
Right. He taught Sunday school. He read the Bible every year from beginning to end, every year of his life. He was okay doing these physical readings because most of the Cayce 14,000 Cayce readings are health related. People would come to him from all over or write to him with various degrees of physical issues, and he would provide them with a reading, and in the reading he would tell them what to do about it, and it was very unorthodox. Today, and as I said, you know, when I studied the readings, they went everywhere from A to Z, probably, if there was a Z malady I couldn't find. But
Zika!
You know, and today, even though these readings were done in the 20s, 30s, 40s, it's still holding up. He was so far ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And that's why we call him the father of holistic medicine. There has been nobody like him since. And those readings are available to everybody. ARE members have access to them 24/7. And if we study those readings, there is a wealth of information. It was only when he started to do the life readings, when the past life information started coming out, that he really sort of freaked out. And for a few days at least, you know, he seriously considered, I'm not going to do this anymore. This is just not, you know, what I want to be doing. But he slowly came around to it. And he always said that if he found out that if in any way, shape, or form that he hurt anybody by these readings, that he would stop doing them. And, of course, that wasn't the case. It was just the opposite. So, yeah, he is my mentor. I have been studying the Cayce work since 1987, and it continues to be a shining light for all of us.
To me, it's extraordinary work that he did. Believe it or not, even along with him, and I think I read his books in conjunction with another woman who probably a little different realm, but Ruth Montgomery, I'm sure you remember her. And it's just a myriad of other people. I mean, it's just unbelievable the information that was out there as I was growing in my metaphysical coursework, if you will. In the 70s and then into the 80s and 90s, all the while in the 80s and 90s working for a Christian radio station, it was really fascinating there. But it is one of those things where we sometimes this kind of stuff is placed in our hands, and this was sort of placed in your hands, so to speak. And I mean, I suppose we could go all esoteric here and say, well, you know, you chose all this stuff. I don't know, you know, Joanne, you know, before you came into this life, this is what your contract was all about. But for those people who are not awake and really conscious yet, you know, they might look at you and say, wow, this is very interesting. Well, you know, why did you choose this? So from a strictly earthly human perspective, what was the catalyst that took you in this particular direction?
Well, from the time I was a child, I found myself fascinated by the 18th century. And, you know, I used to wear my hair in ringlets and dress up in period costume for Halloween and write with a quill pen and by candlelight and listen to Baroque music and when I went to school, I was reading Dolly Madison, about Dolly Madison and Abigail Adams. They were my heroes. I had this penchant for that time period, and even all through college, I had a professor say, "You have the most uncanny feel for the 18th century of anybody I ever met." And it's a long story, but I won't go into it. But anyway, I did, and I found out later that that was because I actually had a past life in that time period. I didn't come to that conclusion immediately. I was reading books by Ruth Montgomery and Jess Stern, and I read The Search for Bridie Murphy. That was the first reincarnation book. And having grown up Catholic, it was totally against everything that I had been taught, but it made sense to me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I like this. So I fancied myself as a writer. As a matter of fact, I tell people now, if I had to give you my title, it would be Reporter for the Universe. I like to research. Research is one of the most, gives me the most joy. And so I thought, I'm going to write about this, and I'm going to give this information out. In 1987, when Shirley MacLaine's, they made a movie out of Out on a Limb, the miniseries appeared on ABC in January of 1987. That was the big wake-up call for, I think, thousands of sleeping metaphysicians. Those of us who sort of knew this information before on some level suddenly got reawakened to it, and that really was the catalyst for me. I joined the ARE at that time. I was especially interested in the past life aspect of it, and so that became my area of specialty. And I wasn't doing the work itself. I was just writing about it and bringing people in to talk about it to groups of people, organizing workshops and conferences and lectures and things, and bringing in people from all over the country. And then one of them said to me, "You know, Joanne, you know more about past life work than like 95% of the therapists that are out there. Why aren't you doing it?" And I said, "Because I'm a writer. I'm not a therapist." And they said, No, you're supposed to be doing it." So after years of him insisting that I look into this, I thought, okay. I went and got trained. I got my master's degree in transpersonal studies from Atlantic University, my certified hypnotherapy designation from the Eastern Institute of Hypnotherapy, and my spiritual mentor certification. So I spent years and years studying and doing my homework, and finally I started seeing clients of my own, and that gave me the front seat to their past life journey. And now I'm doing what I'd always hoped to do, which was to be the reporter for the universe who is working with these people. Someone called me a spiritual scientist the other day, which tickled me, and recording their journey. I am not getting on a soapbox and saying, "This is the way it is. You have to believe what I'm telling you." I am allowing these people to tell their own story. You could take it or leave it. Like you said earlier, it's the whole smorgasbord idea. I love it. So that's been my joy. It's been my joy to be able to combine to bring the physical and the metaphysical together, to bridge those two worlds. I have mainstream friends who I never talk about this work with them because it was not in their comfort zone, and I honor that. I would never try to evangelize anybody, but it's just it's important to me. I've seen miracles happen with it, and I just wanted to share the possibilities with others.
Well, and that's really what we're all trying to do, in a manner of speaking. We're just trying to make sense of it all to start with. I mean, especially when you take into consideration that, we come into this world, and after a period of time, our awareness of the previous existence is kind of fades away. It gets glossed over, if you will, by the distractions of this world, and so we forget.
Right.
And over the course of time, we start to remember little clues that we gave ourselves. That was one of the other interesting things that I noticed too, especially because, we've been talking about the Newton Institute and his research, Michael Newton's research, how people would in the life between lives, since I can't think of any other term for that, they would plan out little clues that they would leave themselves, little breadcrumbs in the next lifetime that might help to spur them. There was no guarantee, but, you know, without it, you know, you're going to flounder and struggle and so forth. And I would have to say that maybe mine was a combination of just this sense that this existence is not an accident. Okay, I have no evidence to prove that on my own. It's just a feeling that I have. And going with that feeling, as they say, why don't you go with that? If this isn't an accident, then my life has meaning, which means that I have a purpose and I need to find out what it is. Because if this is an accident, then it doesn't make any difference whether I find my purpose in life or I go out, rape, pillage, plunder, because this is all an accident. It's somehow, for whatever reason, you know, we're here. And then the other one, the other element, I think was a more substantial clue for me, was deja vu. You know, I've been here before. I've never been here before in this lifetime, but I've been here in this room watching this television program, and this person was sitting next to me. But how is that even possible? Because I've never been here before. This is the first time I've seen this human being. I've never laid eyes on this television set, never been in this building before, and yet I have the sense I've been here before. And my analysis of that is the universe is telling me, you're on the right track. You're fine. Now, I had a day when I was 7 years old, a day that went like that. I thought I was going to go crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the things that we need to pick up on is the clues that we may have left ourselves that will help us to get on track.
Right. And one of the other, there's a method that you can use if you don't want to go through hypnosis. It's called the resonance method of past life recall, in which you look at the things in your current life that you're interested in. It could be you're interested in different architecture or time period or music or art or food, your religious preferences. Just every aspect of your current life contains clues from your previous lifetime. And you could put together, you could be like a spiritual detective, and you could put those pieces together. As a matter of fact, that's one of the courses that I teach for people that are a little bit leery about doing hypnosis work. You could put those pieces together. And in my own case as a child, as I mentioned earlier, I just loved the 18th century. Now, I grew up in a blue-collar Italian-American family on the south side of Chicago. So why in the world would I be absolutely fascinated by anything and everything having to do with 18th century American history? Made no sense. But those clues were there, and they are especially prevalent in children. Up until the age of 5, most children can remember very clearly their previous lifetimes. You just need to listen to them with new ears. I have a new grandson, my first grandson, grandchild, and when I'm with him, well, he's only 3 months old, so he's not talking yet. But, I've already started talking to him and telling him, I can't wait for you to tell me, where you've been, what you've been doing, why are you here, what's your soul's mission, how can I help you, do you see angels around you, I see auras, can you, So that kind of conversation, because my own children, when they were young, my son in particular would say things when he was 3. He said, remember that time we came on that ship and then you got off the ship and you left me? And I'm like, what are you talking about? So now here I am all these years later after all this studying that I've done. Now I know what he was talking about. I didn't understand it then.
Yeah.
So there are all kinds of clues. The other clue that we have, which is in my book, are birthmarks. This is the work that Dr. Ian Stevenson did at University of Virginia, because often birthmarks will show you the remnants of a past life wound.
Hmm. Okay.
I have people who have a birthmark on their shoulder, and we do a regression to find out that they were shot there, or they have one on their abdomen, and they were speared there, or some things like that. So he did a lot of work in that area, and it's really quite fascinating.
You know, I don't know why this just suddenly comes to mind, but I'm seeing the image of the former leader of the Soviet Union, Gorbachev, mm-hmm. and that birthmark that he had on his forehead. And the first thing that came to my mind was, in a past life, he was in some altercation, and he was struck in the forehead.
Yep, yep. That would make perfect sense.
You know? Very interesting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he is into this and he had a regression and found that out, but I don't, probably not, you know, but that's a very real possibility.
You know, it's very interesting that my experience over the years has been that people who publicly will state a particular position in philosophy mm-hmm. privately will espouse a different or an altered view of the perspective of the philosophy that they publicly hold. And what I mean by that is, when I was working for the Christian radio station, publicly these people would say whatever was necessary, the proper words, and so on and so forth. But privately, in conversation that was confidential, they would reveal things about things that they've done. Now, nowadays, and I've had some people on my program who have been in this area where their philosophy is set in stone, so to speak. But at the same time, they're involved in activities of a more spiritual, esoteric, and or metaphysical nature that you couldn't find evidence for in the philosophy, and yet they do it anyway. And they have no problem with it whatsoever. And so, I would not be surprised in one sense if he were, if not aware of that, maybe a little more open-minded than most people would think. But you have to bear in mind, too, that the information that we get about these people is so, twisted or, I can't even think of the word, spun. That's the word. You know, it's run through the spinning machine before we ever get there.
Yeah, it's hard to know who their authentic self it really is.
Yeah. And that's an interesting perspective to take a look at in terms of even the political cycle that we've just been through. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, you want to pass judgment and you want to cast stones and you want to eviscerate. And I mean, I got to tell you, there have been some words that have been used that have been pretty, I mean, you know, it's like, well, why don't you just bring out the guillotine and let's just get it over with, okay?
Yeah,
public
right.
execution, okay? But they're, that goes back to what I said earlier in the program. They're students, too. They're just in school.
Mean, you know, countries have karma, too.
Yeah.
And so our country, I think, is going through a major transformation right now. And a lot of this is playing itself out in our political, in the political arena. But, you know, we don't know what's really going on a higher level, spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to hope for the best. And, that we'll come out of this, without, too much damage.
What do you think in terms of some of the other sciences that are giving us those roadmaps? And I'm speaking specifically, of course, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with Vedic astrology. It's referred to as a science. It's much more precise than is Western astrology. And I had one gentleman who shared with me the fact that it doesn't make any difference who was elected, okay? That at a certain point in the calendar year of 2017, I'm not going to go into all the detail, he says basically it isn't going to make any difference. He says, I've looked at both charts and it's not going to make it, we're going to be in the same place at a certain point in 2017, regardless of who's elected.
Mm-hmm.
And that person may not even be in office by the time we get there. And he's not saying anything other than don't worry about all of this stuff
mm-hmm.
because the roadmap says this is where we're going to be. And yes, there might be a rainstorm, could be fog, could be sunny, could be hail, could be an earthquake. We don't know, but we do know that this is the path that we have to take. This is the way we're going.
Yeah, but we have free will.
True,
and
true.
That plays itself out so many times, and you can change the consciousness, just through through working on that higher level. So it very well could be that's the path, but I think at any given point in time we can alter it. Now, we could alter it for the worse. Or just, you know, if the path that we're on ultimately will result in something positive, that remains to be seen. But, you know, I understand astrologically that certain things are inclined to happen at certain points in time. And I've heard many lectures on that topic, and I've always found them quite fascinating. But then in the aftermath, you know, you hear, well, it could have been a lot. We just passed through this. It could have been a lot worse, but apparently the consciousness of the people shifted it. So, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and I do trust in that the universe will take care of us, and we'll be fine.
Well, I know that, and because I have people come around me from time to time, and I've even had conversations, and I know there are some people who are really, really concerned. They're really worried about the future, and they say, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, "I have no problem. See, here's my issue. The words of warning that they are saying today, they were saying in 2012, in 2008, in 2004, in 1980, in 1968. It's like it just never ends. So I don't take any of that. To me, that's part of the spin. I'm not worried. And I'm taking it another step from what you're saying and saying the universe is going to take care of it. And whatever the coursework is that is before us, okay, in the future, that's what's there. And there's nothing we can do about that. All we can do is prepare ourselves. Study, okay? You know, if you need to cram, fine. Prepare in that respect. And just be ready. Because it may not even happen. See, this is the other fascinating thing, Joanne. I think, and I'm not sure, I'd love your perspective on this. But when people begin the process of preparation for something, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't happen. Right. But if you don't prepare, you just ignore it, boom, it happens.
Right. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah. I do believe that. That is true.
Yeah. So I think that people just need to kind of, you know, lighten up a little bit, relax. It's everything's okay. Okay. You know, go out for, you know, because we're all students, just go out for a little recess, okay?
Yeah.
And when the bell rings, come on in and we'll do a little more study. We'll get prepared and everything will be just fine. And
we'll
I think
pass
that
this course one way or the other.
We absolutely will. We absolutely will pass this course.
Right.
This is fascinating. I am quite intrigued by all of this. And I know, too, that people, you know, they're living with all kinds of issues in their lives, relationship dynamics, job dynamics, location dynamics. In other words, where they live, they're not real happy with, or, you know, and so forth, on top of the various aches and pains and maladies that they are dealing with throughout their lives. And there is, if not a way of relieving the malady, of at least gaining an understanding. And maybe that might be, that's kind of like the example you gave earlier. Who knows? Maybe you'll have a spontaneous healing.
Right. Well, healing is the ultimate goal. And, you know, as I say at the end of the book, you know, yes, karma can be a real pain, but lucky for us, there is a cure.
Hmm. And we don't have to go to the pharmaceutical companies to get it.
No, right.
Okay.
Right.
By the way, I have to tell you, I was watching one of those commercials. I think it was a 2-minute commercial for a particular drug. Now, I had to ask my wife, what was this drug for? Because at least half of the time was spent, and maybe 3/4, talking about the side effects.
Exactly.
I remember it was diabetes. It was having to do with diabetes. And I'm going, I'd rather deal with the diabetes.
Why bother to tell me all this? I don't even know what this drug is for most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, it goes by so fast sometimes, and it's just amazing. And it's along the same lines as when I see the advertisements for cars on TV, and then they put that fine print on the screen. I can't even read it.
I know.
And so I'm wondering, if I can't read it, then what's the point? How is that?
The announcer reads it for you, and he reads it so fast you can't understand a word.
And that's the other part on radio, is they do that. And I'm going, and what's the point? Because if you can't understand it, it's also like the fine print in software. Like you download an app or something, and it gives you the terms and conditions. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody did an interesting little study not too long ago, sort of a survey. And they asked people to go onto this computer, and they asked them to download this particular piece of software. And the terms and conditions came up. And I think it was 9 out of 10 just clicked on through. The 10th person actually read the terms. And one of the terms was that you would give up your firstborn.
Oh, no.
Now, this was just a gimmick. This was just a way to see what, you know, what people would do. But that's what it said. You know, and 9 people would be giving up their firstborn.
My goodness.
It's really interesting. Karma can be a real pain. You can take and look at your past life clues to current life maladies. And Joanne DiMaggio has been my guest. It's basically how you can transform your life by uncovering your past lives. And we encourage you to go to Joanne DiMaggio. That's JoanneDiMaggio.com. Not only to find out about karma can be a pain, but also the other books that she's written on writing and so forth, and your soul. And we encourage you to join us here on a regular basis. Before I let you go, Joanne, I wanted to first of all, I wanted to invite you, should you ever be in the area of Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much. I would love to do that.
And of course, before we let any of our guests go, if we have the chance to, and most times we do, ask you 3 final questions.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Don't worry. This is not a test.
Okay.
Who is Joanne DiMaggio?
Okay. Joanne DiMaggio is an inspired teacher and writer and past life specialist who has been studying the Edgar Cayce materials since 1987, has been doing past life research for 30 years, and is the director of the Unity Holistic Healing Center in Charlottesville, Virginia.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work you're doing now?
I want to be able to reach as many people as I can in the time that I have left on this planet, just to provide them with an alternative way of looking at life and a deeper understanding of their role as a spiritual being having a human experience.
And what is your life's purpose?
I am, as I said earlier, a reporter for the universe. My role is to research, gather information from all sources, put it together in some sort of cohesive fashion, and then disseminate that information to the world. And so I'm hoping that my books are doing just that.
Well, Joanne, thank you so much for sharing your story, your time, and your work with us. And we look forward to talking with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Richard. I've enjoyed our time together.
Once again, it's JoanneDiMaggio.com. The book we're talking about, the subject matter most of the program today is Karma Can Be a Pain. And we encourage you to pick up a copy at JoanneDiMaggio.com. A reminder that this program runs much longer than the radio extension of about 50 minutes. So we encourage you to go to RichardDugan.com, the radio show's page, and listen to the entire interview. Until next time, I'm Richard Dugan, and we say to you, love Talal.